This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, Across the Border Edition.
Yeah.
You know that we're heavy in Toronto.
Yeah, we're the North. We've become the North now.
Yeah.
We are the North.
Play Toronto like Doug Christie. Shout out to Cam. That was a long time ago. Now you guys say like play Toronto like Kyle Lowry or something like that.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah. So shout out to Canada. You know, we've been doing a lot of episodes with people from Canada.
We make no secret of how much we love Toronto, how we love Montreal. We love our neighbors up North.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a dope episode because not only do we get to tap in with one of the brightest entrepreneurs north of the border in Toronto, but we get to talk about some stuff that we haven't talked about yet, as far as like YouTube, which is huge.
You get so many questions about it.
Yeah.
So many questions about it.
Yeah, entrepreneurship, women entrepreneurship, leaving the corporate world, a lot of different things, but YouTube is especially something that we got to double down on because we haven't spoke about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, Lynn Allure. So Lynn Allure is, like I said, one of the brightest entrepreneurs in Toronto right now. She was actually in the corporate world for a while.
Finance major.
Yeah, finance major. And then now just a full-time entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So she has a community where she helps women in business and really execute their dreams. And she's also a YouTuber.
Yeah.
She's huge on YouTube. We got to get on your YouTube platform. That's a fact. She has a quarter million.
Yeah, we should.
She has a quarter million subscribers on YouTube.
Yep.
A bunch of videos that have gone viral, a bunch of videos with over 100,000 views, and she's just a really dope person. So she reached out to us, and you know, I asked her if she wanted to come on the platform, if she wanted to come on the podcast, and she was like, sure. So here we are. Oh, Canada.
Hey.
First,
that was a nice intro.
Appreciate
it. You got some experience at this. I'm telling you, this guy's good.
So first and foremost, thank you. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for having me on, because honestly, this is like one of my favorite podcasts right now. I'm always telling anyone who's interested in like finance and personal development, yo, you got to listen to that Earn Your Leisure podcast. So it's kind of crazy that I'm on it right now. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being a earner worldwide. Appreciate that.
Yeah, no, that's a fact. That's a fact. So, all right, let's get into it. Like I said, I want to talk about a variety of different things. But first, I want to talk about your journey from leaving corporate America. Well, I was gonna say corporate America, corporate Canada, and becoming a full-time entrepreneur. So what did that, because I know you come from, you know, African parents, and if anybody knows any African parent, they don't play that. Like, they like, you know what I'm saying?
You're gonna be a doctor.
Yeah, they very strict. Your parents are from Ghana, right?
Yeah,
shout out to Ghana.
Both my parents.
We're gonna go to Ghana.
Yeah, we got some special plan for Ghana.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, we had a guest on, Kwame Anku, who had some ties there, and it was like, listen, we got to bring you guys to Ghana. They need to see this. But when you come, I'm gonna host you. It's gonna be different from you traveling there. We're gonna host you. So we are very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're gonna have a whole plan for Ghana. You
gotta come with us.
Yeah,
I'm down.
Perfect.
Ghana's always a vibe. It's such good vibes, such good energy. Everyone's so friendly, so nice, so welcoming. You guys are gonna have a good time.
I bet. So, all right. So, like I said, you're a YouTuber, and amongst other things, but what made you make the transition to, you know, working in the corporate world to actually going online and putting out content for a living?
Yeah, so I started my YouTube journey about 4.5 years ago. At the time, I was still in college. So it was just an outlet for me. I was like my last year of college. I thought it would be kind of fun to put out a video. And the idea of YouTube sounded fun to me too, the idea of having a YouTube channel. But I didn't mess with social media at all. I had no social media. I just wasn't on it. Very private. And I put out a video on YouTube because I thought, you know, no one's really going to find it in my real world. Like, none of my friends or family. So it'd just be fun, my own little outlet, little community. So I had zero expectations for it. And after my first video got like, I think 32 or 38,000 views in like the first month. But I wasn't sure if that was like good or bad because I had zero expectations. And then I got an email from YouTube or from Google actually saying I need to put in my direct deposit information because I made $78. So when I get to $100, which is the threshold that YouTube pays you over, they need to find somewhere to put it into. So I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I like wrote in my journal, like, oh my God, thank you, God. I made $78 for this video. But it was still just a hobby for me. It was a hobby that just so happened to make money. And then brands started reaching out to me to do sponsored videos. And I was like, okay, cool. So this is like a side hustle for me now.
What was that first video about?
Sorry?
What was the first video about?
Oh, it was a story time video. That time, those were like pretty popular. You like talk about something that happened to you, what you learned from it, and what the takeaway was. It was like entertaining, but still educational and more like learn from me. It wasn't worth it, or you could have done it this way, blah, blah, blah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So then I was just doing like sponsored videos for brands. But during this entire time, I like had graduated from school. I was working full time, like a 9-to-5. And then I went back to university and I was still working my full time 9-to-5. But YouTube was a side hustle for me. So I was just doing mainly sponsored videos for the most part. And then it wasn't until I graduated from university that I was able to put more time into my YouTube, and then it just started to make more sense and more dollars. I unlocked the algorithm. I unlocked like the business behind it, and it really started to make sense. So it went from a hobby that just so happens to make money sometimes to a side hustle. And then I started making really good money on it. And I'm like, I could actually do this full time instead of having to go to my corporate job. So I just made that transition, which it was a transition. I want to make that very known that it wasn't just one day I woke up and it was like, I'm going to quit my job as an accountant and just like do YouTube full time. I like made that transition eventually. And now I do YouTube full time and my two other online businesses.
So yeah, like I said, I mean, I probably should have said this at the beginning of the show, but YouTube is something that everybody is aware of, but people don't fully understand. Like, it's a real business, it's an industry. Mm-hmm. And especially like a lot of kids, like, you know, they only watch YouTube, and you know, a lot of times people don't, they don't take it serious. They're just like, oh, you a YouTuber, or you know, you just making selfie videos about stuff. But it's like, nah, people is actually out here making millions of dollars, and it's a billion-dollar industry, and brands are paying millions of dollars for people to advertise their products and promote their products, and people are selling products. So that's why I really wanted to talk about YouTube so much, because it's like, I don't think people fully understand the power of YouTube. So just to kind of give some background perspective on YouTube, it's like, it's the second biggest search engine online, second to Google, and Google actually owns YouTube. So, you know, that kind of puts things in perspective.
Yeah.
So when you think about YouTube, don't just think about it as a place that just has a bunch of random videos. Think about it as an industry.
Yeah.
It's a multi-billion dollar
industry. And that's something very important about it, is that it always gets younger. Like, a lot of these platforms don't realize, like, yo, how do I get a younger audience base? Well, YouTube will always have a younger audience base, because a lot of kids watch YouTube. And as long as there's going to be kids watching videos, YouTube will always grow. So if you're looking for a place to start there, because they have the audience.
Yeah, and shout out to my son Nasir, shout out to Choi's son Christian, shout out to Jamal's son Chase,
and Jordan. Shout out Jordan too.
Yeah, they all watch Heavy. YouTube. They don't even watch television at all.
Don't have no favorite shows, man.
Yeah. So that just goes to
a lot of people don't. Yeah. A lot of people don't even watch TV anymore. It's just YouTube and like Netflix. People just stream stuff, and that's why, like, before, when even some of my aunts and uncles right now, like, you can't tell them I do YouTube full time, because they'll be like, what? Why? Like, are you crazy? You went through all this school, you're an accountant, and now you do YouTube? Like, that sounds madness to them. But like, I've made more money on YouTube than I would have made in my accounting career for like the next few years. Let me not say a dollar amount, because you know, the aunts and uncles might be watching. But yeah, it's one of those industries that, like, it's only going to grow because people don't watch the television anymore. They're not sitting down and watching commercials in between your favorite show. Before, you used to sit down, watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. There's going to be three commercials and you're going to sit there and watch all three. They don't do that anymore. They're on social media. They're on YouTube. They're on Netflix. So if you can't pay to advertise with the big guys, you're going to go to influencers, and that's more influential. You're going to go to the YouTube channels where they already have an audience that's cultivated, and you kind of can gauge their target, your target audience, through their audience, through the influencer's audience. So it makes more sense to go through a YouTuber or an Instagrammer than it does to put an ad on the television where you don't know who's going to be watching it.
When you got that first $78, you saw like, wait, they actually are giving me money. I mean, did you come to a realization of how you were actually getting paid, or was there a process of you having to do like some research? Like, wait, where is this money coming from?
I knew it was Google AdSense, but at the time I was doing so many other things that I kind of didn't really care. I was like, okay, I got $78. That's cool. That's probably how YouTube works. Like, AdSense revenue. I put out a video, I got paid. Cool. I keep it moving. But then it was when I realized that, oh, okay, it had to do with my CPM, and it had to do with where I placed the ads and how many ads I placed. That's when it, like, a light bulb went off. I'm like, oh, okay, so I can make money on AdSense revenue and get money from brands, and then put my little links in the bottom, get my affiliate links going. So that's when it was a process, honestly. It wasn't like things just clicked and I was like, ooh, $78, how do I turn this into $780? I was just like, okay, like, $78 is cool.
Yeah.
But I wasn't thinking too much into it.
There was a lot of verbiage there. So CPM is, that's how much you're gonna get paid for every 1,000 views. So we talk about that a lot when we talk about the audios, is how much you're gonna get paid per 1,000 listens. YouTube, obviously, how much you're gonna get paid per 1,000 views. And it can fluctuate, which is something that we have to learn.
Well, the cost per milli, I hear a lot of people say that because it kind of sounds, it makes sense that it's, but the CPM, the cost per milli, is actually not the cost per 1,000 views, it's the cost per 1,000 impressions on your video. So a lot of people think that, though, it's just your cost per 1,000 views, but it's the impression. So it matters how many ads you have there. And the CPM is determined by, basically, it's a good indicator to find out how much brands are willing to pay to put their ads in front of your video. So the CPM is determined by, like, I don't know if you guys want to get into this.
No, we're about to go into it right now, actually. That's what we do at Earn Your Leisure. So this actually is perfect because, you know, the thing with, and shout out to Max Maxwell. I remember he was saying, like, you know, when he hit like 15,000 a month on YouTube, and he was like, how he looks at that is that's like, he does real estate. So he was like, he was like, 15,000 a month, that's five investment properties. That's how he's looking at it. Like, that's five investment properties. All you got to do is all you got to do is put out content, though. You don't have to change the boiler. You don't have to cut any grass. So it's like YouTube, we couldn't do this podcast without having an episode about YouTube, because it's like one of these situations where it's like a joke until it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I remember a doctor I was watching, he went to like medical school and all that, and his last year in medical school, his last year as a resident, he quit to become a full-time YouTuber. And everybody was saying, like, you went through all of this medical training and all that, you're going to quit to do YouTube? And he's like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And he's making like $500,000 on YouTube. So I think it's important for people to educate. So, all right, let's break this down. Let's start from the very, very beginning, since you was already on the CPM. So CPM is how you get paid, right? So, all right, yeah, can you explain that in detail as far as CPM? Because the good thing with YouTube is that they put ads in your video. It's not like, you know, with the podcast, it's a little different on the audio side. So for us, we have two ways how we put out content, audio and visual. The audio is through, like, you know, Anchor, and that gets shipped to Spotify and Apple and all of the audio outlets. And Anchor kind of provides ads for us, but we have to try to get outside ad revenue as well. Where YouTube, we can get outside ads, but YouTube is always going to be ads there because they provide ads. Now, it's different what kind of content you put out because it's a different CPM, but that's more, we'll go into that later. So yeah, so, and it's a CPM. So can you talk about CPM and kind of explain that to the people in layman terms?
Yeah, so your CPM, which stands for your cost per milli, is the cost per every 1,000 impressions for every ad that's placed on or around your video. So you'll see if a video's shorter than 10 minutes, it'll only have one ad at the beginning, maybe an ad at the ending. But when a video is longer than 10 minutes, then you're able to place multiple ads throughout the video. So for those long skippable ads, as long as the viewer watches it for 30 seconds or more, that's an impression. Or those ads that you can't skip through, that's an impression. Those ads on the side of the YouTube video, if it's on there, that's an impression. The banners that show up at the bottom, if someone watches that, that's an impression as well. So for every 1,000 impressions you get on your video, that's your cost per milli. That's how much you get paid for it. The thing about the cost per milli is that it's not determined by you, though. It's determined by YouTube. So it's basically how much ad payers or ad creators are willing to pay to put their ads in front of your video, in front of your audience. And it's basically an indicator to see how valuable marketers take your content, basically, like how valuable they perceive your content to be to help them with the business development and their business goals.
Okay. So, and that's interesting because it's like what we found out, that depending on what type of content you put out, that determines your CPM. So like us, as a financial channel, our CPMs are a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's clean content. Like, you know what I mean? It's clean business content. So we're not cursing or anything like that. Whereas like if it's a lot of cursing, they can have potentially way more subscribers, way more views, but their CPMs might be like $3. So to give you an example, our CPMs usually range from, what's the CPM price for us?
Our average right now is probably like 35, but we had some that go up to like 70. We've had some that are 112. So really, like you said, just depends on the type of content and how clean it is and how many people are watching.
And if it's not, so if it's dirty content, I don't want to say dirty, but if it's like cursing and stuff like that, they could demonetize it and not have anything on it at all.
So people gotta realize that. So like when you really get into this YouTube thing, you gotta really like dive in and do YouTube Studio. I would recommend that highly, and study the analytics. So like a lot of times, if you'll see that money sign is yellow, that means that you're not monetizing the way. There's something in your content that is causing it to not get the ad space that it's supposed to. And then another thing is, like, a lot of times people don't realize that they don't turn on their ads. So like you can put on start, you can put on in the middle, you can put on at the end. You can actually place your ads where you like. So a lot of people don't realize that, and it's a gem because it's like, the more ads you have, then there's more revenue. But there's something that we kind of skipped, and that is like when you can start monetizing, right? Like there's a certain amount of users you have to have and a certain amount of views you have to have, right? Is it like 1,000 for the users?
Yeah, 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. They've changed it now. It wasn't like that just a couple years ago, but they've changed it, and now you need 1,000 subscribers, 4,000 watch hours before you can even start monetizing your platform.
Okay. All right. So now it's all right. So now, and that's important too, with the 10-minute thing. Shout out to Mike. He actually put us on to that. He watched the video and on YouTube, mm-hmm. and it showed him that, yeah, the key with the clips, like even a lot of the micro clips that we put out from our episodes, they're always, if you notice, they're always longer than 10 minutes or like at 10 minutes, because then you can put multiple ads in. If it's anything lower than 10 minutes, then you can only put one ad in. So it makes a big difference if you have three ads in a video as opposed to having one ad in a video.
Yeah, and also to touch upon what determines the CPM, it's not necessarily only when the content is clean, but that definitely is a big indicator. Like if you're swearing, cussing, you're talking about some vulgar stuff, that's probably going to get demonetized. So it's not even an option of having a low CPM. But there are certain niches that have higher CPMs than others. So you guys have a high CPM because of the topics that you talk about. So some of those topics are like real estate, luxury things, so like luxury real estate, luxury cars is a big one as well. Gaming is big as well, but it depends like what niche in gaming. I'm not a gamer, so I wouldn't be able to like indicate too deep, but finances, business, credit, just basically, oh, Amazon FBA, that's another one. So it depends on how much the advertiser is willing to pay. They're not willing to pay to put their videos in front of like pranks and like couple channels. So when you're smaller, you're not going to see a big CPM for that. But then once you become,
What about makeup tutorial? Because that's very big for women. What about makeup?
So the CPM on that isn't necessarily high until you start ranking. So like for prank channels, family channels, makeup channels, because it's a kind of saturated industry, I guess, but it's very popular. So once you start ranking and you have a very loyal customer, not customer base, audience, then the marketers are like, okay, I would pay more to put my ads in front of their videos and stuff. So it depends on how large your channel is. When you're first starting out and it's a like beauty channel, fashion channel, prank channel, you're not really going to see large CPMs because there are so many people doing that and advertisers aren't necessarily willing to pay for content like that in the beginning when you're just starting out.
Okay. All right. So now let's go to the actual content. So that, I guess that's the most important thing, right? So like so our content is financial. I guess that's the hardest thing. Like people want to start, all right, you want to become a YouTuber. Yeah. You're on your journey to become a YouTuber, right? The first thing is like, what do you want to talk about? So we talk about financial stuff because we have a financial podcast, so that's easy. How did you find your niche to talk about, and what do you recommend for people as far as finding their niche, as far as the content that they're putting out?
So I would say the easiest thing is to do something that you feel comfortable with, something that you're confident in as well, because if you're not confident in what you're talking about, it's going to show, it's going to come off on camera. People are going to be able to detect that. So make sure whatever topic you decide to go into, you're comfortable and confident about that topic. But then also your audience is going to let you know what they want to see more of. So before you even start your channel, I would say write out a whole list of titles of things you want to talk about pertaining to that. Okay, you want to start a beauty channel. That's cool. Write out 50 videos that you can do that's relating to beauty that people want to see. If you can't come up with 50, it's probably a topic that you're not that interested in and you're not that confident in. Then you should probably try and find something else that you are actually interested in.
So I'm not putting out a prank video. I'm not putting out vacations with the kids. I'm not putting out how to cut hair. It'll be all over the place. I do those things, but it'd just be all over the place.
Right. Yeah, no, you want to choose a topic and then try to find videos that surround that have to do with that topic, and don't make it too wide of a range. Like especially in the very beginning, nobody knows who you are and they don't want to see every single component of your life, because unfortunately like you're not that relevant to them. So it's nice that you have kids, it's nice that you know like to shape up your beard and stuff, but like someone who comes on your channel and they want to see you hanging out with your kids, they're probably a dad with kids too and they relate to that, but they might not have the same, you know, grooming procedures that you do. They don't want to see the video, the next video, to be you grooming yourself. Like, it's not relevant to them. So you kind of have to keep a consistent theme, because it confuses your audience. It confuses your subscriber. They come to your channel, they see one video that's pertaining to your family life and your kids. Then they go look for another video that has to do with that, and there's nothing else. Or maybe there's only one, and it's the one that they just watched. They're like, okay, this is what, this was nice, this was cool, he's a nice guy, and they keep it moving. But you have to have consistency in all of your videos.
All right, there you have it. That's the basics. On the next segment, we're gonna go into how to really pop off and become viral. You gotta become viral these days for sure. And you know, just some more hacks and useful tips about, you know, getting popping online. So yeah, we're going to that next. All right. So yeah, and this is, once again, I want to reiterate why YouTube is so important, because for business owners as well, not just for people that want to become full-time YouTubers. Like, we talk about social media a lot, like, as far as like, it's a great way to push your brand. But for entrepreneurs, I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs listening on your leisure. YouTube is extremely important to push your brand and you know, get the brand awareness out there. So even if you don't plan on being a full-time YouTuber, you can still use YouTube. It's just like any other social network. There's a lot of, there's millions and hundreds of millions of people on YouTube. So to not be on YouTube as a business owner, it's kind of like not being on Instagram.
Yeah, and it's something we learned. Like, we didn't start with a YouTube channel. Like, we didn't start it till April. Everybody knows that the podcast itself started in January, but we learned, like, yo, we have to grow the audience. This is a great way, this is a platform. We knew that all our kids watched it. We knew we had to be on it. So we made a concerted effort to say, look, this is where we're going.
Yeah, and it's helped out a lot. Like, if we just did audio, we would be nowhere near where we are now, because we don't have the same reach that we would have if we do YouTube. And it's a lot of other things that we do exclusively for YouTube that we'll talk about. But all right, so as far as getting on YouTube, because it's like anything, right? Like, same thing with social media, Instagram. When you start with zero, and it's like, how do I grow it to 250,000 subscribers? So yeah, viral. Shout out to Drake, viral movie. Shout out to Drake, Fabio Foreign, and Sosa Geek. I think that's his name.
That's your song, man.
That's my favorite song right now. So your first video, you have no subscribers, and you have 32,000 views on that video in a month. That's a lot. That's a lot of views. How did you do that?
So YouTube has little pockets and little niches, little communities. So what I did was, I found videos that look like my type of content. I would search. So my first video was a story time. What I did was, I searched story time, and then I filtered the results by upload date, and that puts the newest uploads at the top. So then I searched for videos that kind of looked like they were in my neighborhood on YouTube, my community on YouTube, and then I would comment on their videos like, I could totally relate, da da da. I made a video similar to that. It wasn't very spammy, like, hey, check me out, I just started a channel, but it was like, it was a comment letting people know that, like, I did also upload something similar. So from that, what that does is, it puts your comment there, and everyone does it where they're watching a video and they kind of scroll to see what the comments say. And so if your comment is there and you're one of the only comments there, even if that video is only going to get 1,000 views, there's a good chance that a portion of those views are going to see your comment. And from those views to your comment, they're going to see your channel, and maybe they're going to either subscribe or engage with your content somehow. So that was one thing that I did to grow my first video and how it got so many views. I was commenting a lot. And then now, as I've grown, I don't really get an opportunity to watch people's videos and make relevant comments as much. But I'll watch my videos on incognito and see what shows up that's similar to my channel and how I can put my spin on it and do it better. Because when I watch it on incognito, there's no bias there. There's no other channel history.
Can you explain that, incognito?
Yeah, so incognito is just browsing in private mode. So on Google Chrome, it's called incognito, and in Safari, it's called private browser. But what that does is, it doesn't warp the search information. So there's no bias. When you watch a video and you're signed into your profile, YouTube is recommending videos for you based off of everything that you've ever watched on your profile. That's why you'll watch like one cleaning video, you'll go back to your homepage, and there's like four other cleaning videos recommended to you. And it, over time, it builds up a profile for you and a portfolio for you, and it changes your recommendations based off of stuff that you've already searched and stuff that you've already watched. So when I watch my videos on incognito, what that does is, it allows me to see what YouTube associates my channel with and what kind of content YouTube kind of places my videos in, what kind of neighborhood on YouTube my videos are in. And that kind of gives me more of an idea of the type of people who watch my video and what they're interested in more, along with, of course, my analytics. I do watch my analytics and see what my audience likes more of. I listen to the comments, but that's one way that I get to see what YouTube, what the YouTube algorithm associates my channel with. So from there, I'll get an idea. I'll put my spin on it, my flip on it, and I'll do it myself. And then it usually does good when I choose a video like that.
Okay. Algorithm. Can you talk about that? The YouTube algorithm?
Yeah. So the YouTube algorithm, because it's a business, right? YouTube, they're just interested mainly in like watch time and dollars. So they tend to push videos that have high CPMs. So YouTube's videos that get them more money, and then high watch times as well, and high engagement. Because what YouTube wants ultimately is watch time, and they want their viewers to stay on their channel or on their platform. Because if you're not on YouTube, you're on something else. You're on Hulu, Netflix, maybe Instagram. You're like on another platform. So what they want is watch time and engagement. So if you upload a video and in the first few minutes or first few hours, I should say, it's doing well, the algorithm is most likely going to push you some more. So that's kind of like a tip behind your algorithm. Like in the first hour, you should probably be commenting back to comments and stuff like that and trying to boost up that engagement within the first hour.
Can we talk about your viral video? One of the things you said is like not to chase trends, which you kind of did with the dad makeup voiceover. Can you talk about the benefits of actually chasing that trend and some of the things that didn't work that you learned from that?
Yeah, okay. So that video at the time, it was like a makeup trend that was going around, and a lot of people were doing like, my boyfriend does my makeup, my voiceover, and my dad, I thought it would be so funny if my dad did my voiceover because he's always like cracking jokes on me. He's always making fun of me. So he did it. It was funny. It was cool. And the video did really well. It was like on different social media platforms. I don't have a Twitter. So it was like all over Twitter, all over Facebook. I didn't have a Facebook either. And it did go viral and it got a lot of views. It did make a lot of money because I ended up selling it to, there was a media company that pitches to the Ellen Show, and they bought that video off of me. They bought the rights for that video off of me. So I don't own that video anymore, but I still get the AdSense revenue from that video. But I would say that the game there was the money behind it. And it was a funny like joke. Like me and my dad still laugh about that video to this day. But what I learned is that when you do videos just because it's trendy, but it has nothing to do with what your channel is about, it doesn't necessarily grow your channel or your subscribers. So that video, I got like 2,200 subscribers, I believe, says my analytics, but it has like 800,000 views. So that's not a very good conversion, like views versus people who subscribe. So it ultimately didn't grow my channel. And I learned that if you're gonna hop on a trend, it needs to pertain to what your channel is about. Because I was not a makeup channel. My dad wasn't on my channel. My channel wasn't like a comedy channel either. So it wasn't great for the overall growth of my channel, but it was a learning experience, I would say.
Yeah, that when I heard that story, I'm like, yo, I've never thought about that when people actually buy your content from you. What was that experience like? That was the first time you've done it?
Yeah, that was my first time I had done it. It was just, I was getting a lot of, I think they're like social media sites where they just have a bunch of viral videos, and you'll see a viral video over and over, but it'll have different logos in the corner. So at the time I was getting a lot of questions from different media sources asking if they can post it on their Facebook group. They're like, oh, we have like 6 million followers on our Facebook. We're going to post it. We'll credit you, da 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 da. And I was like, yeah, sure. Just put my link in the description. Go for it. But then someone had asked me, like, have you sold it already? And I was like, sold it to who? That didn't make no sense. And then I got another inquiry around the same time that the first one came in, and it was like, oh, well, we're willing to buy it. So then I went back to the first person. I was like, no, I haven't sold it yet, but you know, I have some inquiries. I said some, like there was more than one, but I was like, yeah, we have some inquiries. So I haven't sold it yet. So they came with their proposal. And then I told the other person like, oh, another media company is willing to buy it for this much. So then the second one ended up having a better price, and I just sold it to them. But the funny thing was that all of that happened like a year and a half, maybe 2 years after I'd already posted that video. So it was weird because the traffic had already died down on that video. Like, I had already made my YouTube AdSense money on that video, and it was like dying down. So I guess some other media outlet picked it up, and then it went viral. And like, it was kind of a different community, really. It wasn't like the audience that had seen it prior.
Another EYL alumni, he had a post on Instagram a few days ago, and he was like, a lot of viral videos don't go viral for like 2 to 3 years or even 5 years after it actually comes out, whether social media or so. You never know. It's like, don't give up on content because you might think, ah, this just flopped. Even Mickey Facts, we had him on, shout out to Mickey Facts, and he had a video that went viral on Instagram when he was rapping for Flex about financial literacy. And he was like, when he first put it out, it didn't really get traction. Mm-hmm. And then out the blue, like earlier this year, it just started blowing up on like a lot of black financial literacy pages. Just so you never know. But I want to ask you about that video because you put that on YouTube and I saw it, and you showed like the clip of it of the analytics. So on the clip, I actually saw the Ascent revenue that you made was like $68,000 from that. It's on there. Right. It's on your page. So
he's like, I'm not exposing
private. Yeah.
It's kind of what we do.
So is that something like all right? So you made $68,000 on a video that had like. How many views did it have? 900,000?
800. Yeah, it was like 800,000.
So that's like typical for some, like a million. Obviously, it depends on CPM and all of that. But like, what was the CPM for that video?
Ooh, I'm not sure what the CPM was on that video, actually. But that was over the lifetime. So that was when I posted it. I think, was that 2017, I think I posted that? Or maybe 2018. But it was over the lifetime. So from the moment I posted it to the current like day that I screenshotted it. So over time, yeah, that's how much it made. I think it was because of the timing too, because I posted it closer to the holidays, and when it did go viral, it was during the holidays when AdSense revenue is the highest. But once it starts gaining a lot of traction and it starts going higher, I noticed that the CPM starts jumping higher and higher. And so that's why I ended up doing so well. But I've noticed that it doesn't necessarily matter what your subscriber count is or even what your channel size is or anything like that. Because some people, they'll post a video on like how much they made on YouTube. And I appreciate the transparency. I respect it, honestly, because someone had posted how much she makes. And I think she has like 1.4 million subscribers. And she had said that she makes like on average about $4,000 a month. I was like, this don't make sense, because when that video went viral and I was making a lot of money off of it, I wasn't even at 20,000, I don't think. Like, my channel was pretty small. So it doesn't necessarily matter what like your subscriber count is. All of that's predetermined by YouTube. And I try to tell people when they're thinking about making that transition from being an employee to being your own boss full time, and like you're using money from YouTube to try and like forecast your budget, I always tell people, like, you don't really have control over the CPM, because it's kind of like, you're putting out a product, you don't know how many people are going to buy it, and you don't know what you're going to sell it for either. You're just putting out a product, and whatever money you get, you get. And it's not like you can go back to YouTube and go tell them, like, actually, you guys told me that I only had 5,000 impressions on the ads this month, but I went and asked my viewers, and they told me, actually, they all watched it. Like, you can't go back and dispute it with YouTube. If they tell you that's how much you're making, that's how much you're making. So I wouldn't know why it made so high, but it did, and I appreciated it, and I took it. But I always take AdSense revenue as a bonus. So I don't rely on AdSense revenue, because that just puts you in a very vulnerable place with your finances. And I don't know about anybody else, but I don't like being vulnerable with my finances. I like to be very calculated and very, like, precise. So, yeah, it's kind of a toss-up. You don't know why it made so much and what the reason is.
Yeah, it's spoken like a true accountant. My next thing is the importance of consistency, right? Because after you went viral, it's not like, hey, I'm going to live off this one video for the rest of my life. You started to put out more content that was more themed, right? You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So after that first video, actually, it was still a side hustle for me, because my main priority was always finishing with uni and like my 9-to-5 career. So it was still a side hustle. I think after that video, I still was putting out, I wasn't very calculated with my videos. It wasn't until recently, like once I graduated from uni and I was paying more attention to my videos, that I was more calculated and I was more consistent with the theme. But also, like, as time goes on, I think when I first started, I was like 21-ish. So like my interest at 21 is different from my interest now. So as time went on, I just started making videos that made more sense to me and what I was more interested in, more confident in. So once I started making more self-improvement videos, personal finances, personal development, entrepreneur type videos, that's when I really started to understand the importance of having like a theme throughout videos. And that's why I always try to tell people, like, if I had known now what I knew back then, I would have definitely themed down, niched down on my content, and I wouldn't have been creating content from like all over the place. It would have been some sort of consistent theme throughout. So now when I'm creating content, it's mainly, it has to do with money of some sort, personal development, just overall becoming a better version of you. So that's the consistent theme that's throughout all my videos that I try to portray in every single video. It's about something personal development related.
So if you take the ads off a video yourself for whatever reason, like let's say you don't want ads on one video, that's going to hurt the chances of YouTube pushing it probably because they don't get paid either? Or...
I would say that they don't really have an incentive to push it. They might, but they don't really have an incentive to. So you could take it off if you wanted to, but also, like, why would you want to do that?
No, because sometimes you might put a video out and the ads that are on the video might be competition for the actual video. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
and yeah.
I noticed that with YouTube, like, something they'll run ads in a video. Mm-hmm. That is like, especially like if you're trying to sell something or if you have a product or something and it's like now you're actually running an ad for somebody else that's doing the same exact thing that you're talking about in the video.
Right, unbeknownst to you, like,
right.
But to the viewer, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's possible that could happen, but mainly people like, they buy from people. So if they're watching their video, they're most likely going to buy from you anyways. But yeah, you could take the ads off if you wanted to. And then... your subscribers watch it, and if it picks up, it picks up. But I find that they have more of an incentive, YouTube as a business, to push videos that are going to make them more money, and also videos that have longer watch times that keep people on their platform. Because at the end of the day, like, the CPM is split. Like, the amount of money you get is after YouTube gets their cut. So if you're making more money, that means they're making more money.
Okay. All right. As far as like revenue, and I'm glad you said that you don't rely on that because there's more ways to make money off of YouTube than just ads. That's just like the first layer. But YouTube it's just like any other thing. It's a platform where you reach a bunch of people. So through that, you can do brand partnerships. You can promote your own products. You can do a variety of different things. So how are some other revenue streams that like you personally utilize or you see other YouTubers utilize outside of just regular ads that YouTube provides?
Yeah. So I definitely make sure that I have enough revenue and income coming in from other places because, like I said, it's a toss-up. And although I can depend on the money coming in, and like it's pretty consistent, there's a theme throughout, you can't rely on it because at any moment, YouTube can come back tomorrow and say like, hey, everyone under a million, y'all don't get paid no more until you reach a million subscribers, figure it out. They probably won't because that's a little wild on their end, but they have the option to do that. So I make sure that I'm making money from other places. For me, I have my affiliate links that I put in the description bar. I have my brand sponsorships, which is when a brand reaches out to you and asks you to promote their product or their brand for a fee. And then I also use YouTube to drive traffic to my two other online businesses, which is my hair extension company and my business society company.
You know, you said something just now as far as the description, like you put the links in the description. I think people overlook that and don't really understand the importance of the description. I know you have a little like a tidbit you said, like you don't put a link within the first three lines, something like that. Can you go into detail about that?
Yeah. So once again, because it's YouTube's platform and not yours, they have the discretion to push videos that, to not push videos that are sending traffic to other external sites. So when the your first three lines above the fold have a link to an external website, they're less inclined to push the video. This is what I was told from like a YouTube insider. I don't know how true that is to this day or if YouTube has changed that, because I do have like two videos that have done pretty well and they have a link on the top fold, but I was told this from an insider, so I try to avoid it if I can. It doesn't really make a difference for me to put the links just a little bit lower, so I tend to do that so that it doesn't kind of like throw the algorithm off or whatnot.
So yeah, that's something that people don't fully understand. So many different things with YouTube. It's like, it says you can just have like a 3-hour situation about that. But I wanted to ask you before we go to the next thing, vlog. A lot of people are doing vlogs, and even us for Earn Your Leisure, some people say like we should do vlogs and things of that nature, like a video vlog, like just a day in the life. So how do you think mm-hmm. that's a good idea for like people that have like, if they're putting out consistent content? Because some people say like the vlog allows people to see like the personal side of you, and it touches on different things, and it's like a your own reality show kind of. So what's your thoughts on vlogs?
So I think vlogs are a good idea if you're trying to be a vlogger or if you've already established an audience, because ultimately this generation, we like solution-based content. That's what everybody's after right now. You're after me, everybody. Like when you watch a video, you're trying to gauge something from it, right? So if you're making content that is even like family vloggers, you know, when people watch that, they feel like they're a part of the family. That's the value that you're getting from it. For people who do hair tutorials, that's the value. You're teaching people how to do their hair. Makeup tutorials, you're teaching them how to do makeup. But like, you don't have to be teaching anything if you're providing some sort of value. If you are you do comedy skits, that's the value that you provide there. Your people are coming to your videos for comedic relief. And if you're vlogging, you're trying to make people feel a sense of belonging and like they're a part of whatever it is that you've got going on. So like with couples channels or even family channels, you might watch an episode and you're like, oh, but what was this? Like, what was the reason? But to somebody else, they're very committed. And those channels tend to have very loyal audiences too, because they're invested in that relationship. They're invested in that family and they feel like they're a part of the family, a friend to the couple. So if you're vlogging and you already have an audience, it kind of makes your audience feel like they're a part of what you're doing already. Like they watch your podcast, they see you guys do all these cool things, you guys are pretty stand-up guys. So they want to know what is the behind the scenes and what does that look like? And that's the value that you provide there because you've already kind of built up your audience. But when you're just coming straight up at the bat and no one really knows who you are, if you're going to be a blogger, stick to that, because then people are going to be invested in you and your life and you're a lifestyle blogger. But if you're going to be doing like couple prank, couple challenge, couple this, couple that, couple, and then all of a sudden you're doing vlogs on your own and you're like, hey guys, so I'm out with the boys. Yeah, it's Friday night. People are going to be like, I didn't sign up for this. I don't care about what you're doing with the boys. Like, where's your girl at? That's what we're trying to watch, because they feel like they're part of a couple. So if you're trying to be a lifestyle vlogger, just stay consistent and stick to that. But if you've already built up an audience and you're trying to do vlogging, it's more so behind the scene, and that's the value that people are getting from that. They want to see like, what do you guys do behind this big empire that you've built?
Oh, BYL story.
Yeah, for sure.
Vacation starts with VA. Whether you're feeling beachy, mountainy, or every-y in between, you'll find all that you love all in one trip to Virginia. Start yours at virginia.org.